Welcome to a special In Case You Missed It weekend edition of Hot Off the Wire. In it, we look back at some of the top stories from the past week, as reported by the Associated Press. I'm Terry Lipschitz, senior producer for Lee Enterprises and your host. Be sure to subscribe to Hot Off the Wire through Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss daily news updates. And now, let's look back at some of those headlines. Each year, the Supreme Court releases rulings for its biggest cases near the end of its term. It was no different this year as the nation's highest court released decisions on cases involving abortion and gun rights.
The Supreme Court has ended the constitutional protections for abortion. After nearly 50 years, the High Court has overturned Roe v. Wade, which is expected to lead to abortion bans in roughly half the states. The ruling comes more than a month after the stunning leak of a draft opinion by Justice Samuel Alito, indicating the once unthinkable decision was coming. In the final opinion today, Alito writes Roe and the 1992 case that reaffirmed abortion rights were both wrong the day they were decided and must be overturned. The ruling comes amid public opinion surveys finding a majority of Americans oppose overturning Roe and handing the question of whether to permit abortion entirely to the states. Sagar Magani, Washington.
What this means to women is such an insult.
That is House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's reaction after the Supreme Court overturned the decision that legalized abortion, Roe versus Wade.
It's a slap in the face to women about using their own judgment to make their own decisions about their reproductive freedom.
The AP's Mark Sherman covers the Supreme Court.
The court's decision was really the culmination of decades of efforts by abortion opponents to undo the Roe v. Wade ruling. And it was really made possible by the addition of three appointees of former President Donald Trump to the Supreme Court. Before that, it would have been unthinkable for the court to take this momentous step.
The outcome of today's ruling is expected to lead to bans on abortion in roughly half the states. Opinion polls showed a majority of Americans favored preserving Roe versus Wade. The Supreme Court decision striking down a restrictive New York gun law will likely lead to more Americans being legally armed in cities and elsewhere. Here's the AP's Sagar Magani.
Challenges are expected in a half dozen states with laws similar to the one in New York, whose top Democrats are ripping the high court decision. From Governor Kathy Hochul.
We don't need more guns on our streets.
To New York City Mayor Eric Adams.
We cannot allow New York to become the Wild Wild West.
Tom King, whose New York gun group challenged the state law, says he's relieved lawful gun owners will no longer be persecuted by laws he says didn't actually keep anyone safe.
We are not the problem. The problem is the criminals and the wrongdoers in the state.
At the White House.
The Supreme Court's decision today defies logic.
Vice President Harris echoing President Biden, who says he's deeply disappointed and is urging states to pass new gun laws. Sagar Magani, Washington.
I'm Ed Donahue, AP News.
The Supreme Court's decision overturning a gun permitting law in New York has several states with firearms restrictions scrambling. Dave Workman of the Second Amendment Foundation says this ruling actually protects New York residents.
I don't think New York citizens have anything to fear at all, except maybe the overreaction from their government in Albany.
But the Reverend Patrick Mahoney of the group Faith Leaders for Ending Gun Violence told a crowd gathered outside the Supreme Court building,
"This is an absolute disgrace when we are seeing increased violence in America through guns."
And I'm Rita Foley, AP News. A not guilty plea from a man accused of trying to kill Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. The AP's Ed Donahue has this.
Nicholas Roski from California was arrested outside Kavanaugh's home near Washington. An FBI agent's affidavit said he was armed with a gun and a knife, was carrying zip ties, and was dressed in black, and also called local police to say he had traveled from California to kill Kavanaugh. After his arrest, Roski told a police detective he was upset by a leaked draft opinion suggesting the Supreme Court is about to overturn Roe versus Wade, the landmark abortion case, and was also upset over the school massacre in Uvalde, Texas, and believed Kavanaugh would vote to loosen gun control laws. Roski remains in custody. A tentative trial date was set for August 23rd. Ed Donahue, Washington.
I'm Rita Foley, AP News.
Late Thursday, the Senate passed a bipartisan gun bill, with the House passing its version Friday. The landmark compromise now goes to President Biden for his signature. That news came as more details from a deadly school shooting in Texas came to light.
Congress has approved its most wide-ranging gun violence bill in decades. It's a compromise that shows both progress in dealing with mass shootings and the partisan divide over gun rights. A day after Senate approval, the House passed the measure on a mostly party-line vote, with Democrats like Jim McGovern saying the nation is tired of gun violence.
The time has come for action.
While Michelle Fischbach and other Republicans say the bill's intent is clear.
An effort to chip away at the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding citizens.
The bill does not have tough restrictions Democrats wanted, like an assault weapons ban, and much of its $13 billion will go towards schools and for boosting mental health programs. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
The Senate easily approved a bipartisan gun violence bill Thursday night. Republican Senator John Cornyn of Texas was one of the key architects.
The potential we have to save lives is worth any sort of concession we might have had to make during the negotiation.
Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal.
It marks meaningful progress.
The bill, which follows mass shootings in Buffalo, New York, and Uvalde, Texas, would toughen background checks for the youngest gun buyers, help states put in red flag laws, and fund local programs for school safety, mental health, and violence prevention. The House now takes up the measure. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Two police officers reportedly passed up a fleeting chance to shoot a gunman outside the Uvalde, Texas elementary school before he went on to kill 21 people inside. A senior sheriff's deputy tells the New York Times that two Uvalde police officers had the chance to stop Salvador Ramos before the rampage inside Robb Elementary that killed 19 children and two teachers. The unidentified officers, one of whom was armed with an AR-15-style rifle, said they feared hitting children playing in the line of fire outside the school. That's what Chief Deputy Ricardo Rios of nearby Zavala County told the Times. Rios says the officers' chance of stopping Ramos passed quickly, perhaps in seconds. Previously, authorities said a school officer drove past the armed Ramos without seeing him, and police inside the school did not confront the gunman for more than an hour. I'm Norman Hall.
Texas's top safety official testified before a state Senate committee about the deadly shooting at a school in Uvalde. 19 children and two teachers were killed. The director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, Colonel Steve McCraw, says there is compelling evidence the law enforcement response
was an abject failure and antithetical to everything we've learned over the last two decades since the Columbine massacre.
McCraw says there were enough officers on the scene to have stopped the gunman 3 minutes after he entered the school. They waited for over an hour.
The only thing stopping a hallway of dedicated officers from entering room 111 and 112 was the on-scene commander, who decided to place the lives of officers before the lives of children.
The on-scene commander was the Uvalde School District Police Chief, Pete Arredondo. McCraw also says the door of the classroom was not locked.
How about trying the door and see if it's unlocked? Okay, that's, you know, what we used to call a clue.
Police were waiting for the key. I'm Ed Donahue.
I'm Mike Gracia reporting. The Uvalde School Police Chief has been placed on leave. Pete Arredondo, the police chief for the Uvalde, Texas School District, was put on administrative leave Wednesday amid criticism of his decision to hold police officers outside Robb Elementary School as 19 students and two teachers were gunned down. The action came one day after Colonel Steve McCraw, the director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, delivered a blistering assessment of Arredondo's actions before a state Senate hearing.
The only thing stopping a hallway of dedicated officers from entering room 111 and 112 was the on-scene commander.
McCraw testified that armed law enforcement officers were on the scene 3 minutes after the gunman entered the school on May 24th. But on Arredondo's orders, they waited for more than an hour in a school hallway. I'm Mike Gracia.
The House committee investigating the riots of January 6, 2021, continued this past week and focused on pressure placed on the Justice Department. In related news, a former lawmaker was sentenced to prison for his role in the riot.
Arizona Republican House Speaker Rusty Bowers says the 2020 election was not rigged in his state. He was asked by the House committee investigating the Capitol riot about a meeting on fake electors and sending fake results to Washington.
I thought of the book, The Gang That Couldn't Shoot Straight, and I just thought, this is a tragic parody.
The committee is hearing about efforts by Donald Trump to pressure elections officials and threats that resulted. Georgia Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger says they counted again and again. Joe Biden won.
Three counts, all remarkably close, which showed that President Trump did come up short.
Republican committee member Liz Cheney says while this was going on,
Donald Trump did not care about the threats of violence. He did not condemn them. He made no effort to stop them. He went forward with his fake allegations anyway.
Cheney says we cannot let America become a nation of conspiracy theories and thug violence. I'm Ed Donahue, AP News.
Now to the House January 6th committee hearings.
A mother and daughter have told the January 6th panel about how Donald Trump's election fraud claims upended their lives. Trump was fixated on Georgia, where Joe Biden beat him by about 11,000 votes. Shay Moss and mom Ruby Freeman were both elections workers in Fulton County, where Trump falsely claimed wrongdoing and singled out Freeman.
A professional vote scammer.
In recorded testimony to the panel.
Do you know how it feels to have the President of the United States to target you?
Her daughter appeared at the hearing and reported death threats and other harassment.
Things like, be glad it's 2020 and not 1920.
Freeman says the FBI urged her to leave her home before the January 6th certification of Biden's win. She did. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And I'm Rita Foley, AP News.
In testimony before the House committee investigating the Capitol riot, former acting Attorney General Jeff Rosen said then-President Donald Trump called almost every day complaining about election fraud.
At one point, he had raised the question of having a special counsel for election fraud. At a number of points, he raised requests that I meet with his campaign counsel, Mr. Giuliani.
Committee member Adam Kinzinger says, imagine if a president could screen future Justice Department employees and asking them,
are you loyal to me or to the Constitution? And it wouldn't take long to find people willing to pledge their loyalty to the man.
I'm Ed Donahue, AP News.
The latest from the House January 6th committee.
Several members of Congress sought pardons for their parts in former President Donald Trump's attempt to deny President Biden's election. In Thursday's House Select Committee hearing, former White House officials in recorded interviews talked about Republicans in Congress seeking pardons from President Trump for their parts in the planning to overturn the certification of President Joe Biden's election. Former Trump Special Assistant Cassidy Hutchinson says that included Florida's Matt Gaetz and Alabama's Mo Brooks.
Mr. Gaetz and Mr. Brooks, I know, both advocated for there to be a blanket pardon for members involved in that meeting and a handful of other members.
Other aides add Republican Representative Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, Andy Biggs of Arizona, and Louie Gohmert of Texas were also mentioned. Gaetz, in a statement, calls the investigation a political sideshow. Perry denies having sought a pardon. Tim McGuire, Washington.
And I'm Rita Foley, AP News.
I'm Mike Gracia, reporting a former West Virginia lawmaker gets 3 months for his role in the January 6th riot. Derek Evans, a former West Virginia lawmaker who live-streamed himself on Facebook taking part in the U.S. Capitol riot, was sentenced to 3 months in prison Wednesday. The 37-year-old Evans pleaded guilty to a felony civil disorder charge. He told the judge he is a good person who unfortunately was caught up in the moment. Evans, a Republican from Pritchard, West Virginia, had been sworn in as a member of the House of Delegates just weeks before the January 6th, 2021 riot. He was arrested 2 days later and resigned a month before the start of the legislative session. I'm Mike Gracia.
Yellowstone National Park reopened this week and a brand of e-cigarettes was banned by the FDA. More on those stories and other national headlines.
I'm Julie Walker. Yellowstone National Park will partially reopen Wednesday, more than a week after floodwaters devastated parts of it, along with surrounding areas. Officials say the South Loop will be the first to open with limited visitors. Then, roughly 2 weeks later, the North Loop is expected to reopen. National Park Service Director Chuck Sam says that means 75 to 80% of the park would be open to the public, but he says it's on a limited basis.
We're going to use an experiment with this license plate system of odd and even numbers, odd and even days to be able to get into the park. And we're asking people to be as patient with us as possible, to be civil with the staff, and we're going to continue to work through that issue. And therefore, it's not going to be as many people as probably would like to come to the park.
Towns surrounding Yellowstone were also devastated by the floods, and now the areas that rely heavily on tourism are taking a financial hit. I'm Julie Walker.
The FDA has banned Juul e-cigarettes. Health officials have ordered vaping company Juul to pull its electronic cigarettes from the U.S. market. It's the biggest blow yet to the embattled company that is widely blamed for sparking a surge in teen vaping. The announcement by the FDA is part of a sweeping regulatory review of e-cigs, which faced little regulation until recently. Since last fall, the FDA had okayed a few e-cigs that account for a very small share of the vaping market. To stay on the shelves, manufacturers must show their products help reduce the harm of smoking for adults without appealing to kids. I'm Shelley Adler.
A jet carrying 126 people caught fire after landing at Miami International Airport, though no serious injuries were reported. Paola Garcia was on the Red Air flight arriving from Santo Domingo.
We were bumping like side to side and all the windows like break.
Three of those on board were taken to a hospital with minor injuries. Rita Foley, AP News.
The state of Michigan agreed to destroy more than 3 million dried blood spots taken from babies and kept in storage. A partial settlement in an ongoing lawsuit over consent and privacy. At the state's direction, hospitals have routinely pricked the heels of newborns to draw blood to check for more than 50 rare diseases. At issue is leftover samples. A deal was reached related to a deadly Florida condo collapse.
A judge has given final approval to a settlement of just over $1 billion for victims of the collapse of a Florida beachfront condo building that killed 98 people. The deal comes just one day before the one-year anniversary of one of the deadliest building failures in U.S. history. Most of the money will go to people who lost family members in the collapse. About $100 million is earmarked for legal fees, and $96 million is set aside for owners who lost one of the 136 units in the building. I'm Shelley Adler.
As Title IX marks its 50th anniversary this year, a WNBA owner is among the women athletes who have benefited from the law. Ginny Gilder is co-owner of the Seattle Storm. She realized what Title IX means 46 years ago on the Yale University rowing team.
We didn't have showers. So the first thing that started happening as we started doing practices out there was that people started getting sick. And that was when the idea of a protest started to develop.
It set off the Yale Strip-In in 1976 to protest inequities in the treatment of men and women rowers. It propelled Gilder to become an Olympic silver medalist in rowing. She became an investor and philanthropist, co-owner of her hometown WNBA franchise. Gilder says without Title IX, you would not have the WNBA.
You would not have all the women who get to compete at the Olympic level, at elite levels, whatever sport you're talking.
I'm Ed Donahue, AP News.
Gas prices and the economy remain a concern for many Americans. President Biden called on Congress to suspend the federal gas tax while mortgage rates continue to increase as home sales slowed. Those stories and more on the state of the economy.
Many Americans are ditching the car, riding their bikes, or carpooling to get to work as gas prices remain high. Gas is $4.94 a gallon this morning. Why is it so high? We asked Chief Economist Mark Zandi at Moody's Analytics.
Oil prices are up almost entirely because of the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the disruptions of Russian oil supply. Russia produces a lot of oil, exports a lot of oil, and that's come off the market. So it's just supply and demand. If you have, you know, less supply, and of course the economy is generating demand for oil, then, you know, prices have to go up, and that's exactly what's been happening.
President Biden's asking Congress to suspend federal gasoline and diesel taxes for 3 months. That would save about 18 cents a gallon on gas. He's urging states to do the same thing.
The president says a 90-day federal gas tax holiday will not solve the issue of high prices,
but it will provide families some immediate relief.
He's urging states to suspend their own gas taxes or provide similar relief, and wants oil companies to refine more and charge less.
I'm doing my part. I want the Congress, the states, and the industry to do their part as well.
But the president's past bids to lower prices have done little, and the gas tax holiday idea is largely unpopular among both parties. Senate GOP Chief Mitch McConnell calls it silly.
Another ineffective stunt
Congressional Democrats have long worried suspending the tax would just give oil companies more profits, with no guarantee drivers would benefit at the pump. Sagar Meghani at the White House.
I'm Rita Foley, AP News.
On Capitol Hill, Fed Chair Jerome Powell says gas prices are weighing on the economy.
The surge in prices of crude oil and other commodities that resulted from Russia's invasion of Ukraine is boosting prices for gasoline and fuel and is creating additional upward pressure on inflation.
Powell says the Fed will assess interest rates on a meeting-by-meeting basis. Ed Donahue, AP News.
The Treasury Secretary addresses the possibility of a recession. There it is, that R word again.
I don't think a recession is at all inevitable.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen on the delicate dance being done by Fed Chair Jerome Powell as interest rates go up.
His goal is to bring inflation down while maintaining a strong labor market. That's going to take skill and luck, but I believe it's possible.
Yellen spoke on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos. I'm Shelley Adler.
The latest on mortgage rates. Average long-term mortgage rates went up this week following last week's big jump, the biggest in 35 years. Freddie Mac reports the 30-year rate ticked up to 5.8% this week from last week's 5.7. The average rate on a 15-year fixed-rate mortgage, popular among those refinancing their homes, rose to 4.9%. A year ago, the rate was 2.3%. Higher borrowing rates appear to be slowing the housing markets, but home prices kept climbing in May. The national median home price jumped almost 15% in May from a year earlier to $407,600. That's an all-time high, according to the National Association of Realtors. I'm Rita Foley.
A fourth straight month of declining home sales in the U.S. Existing home sales dropped 3.4% in May compared to April, as increasing mortgage rates and record high prices discouraged house hunters. The National Association of Realtors says sales last month were down 8.6% from May of last year. But even as home sales slowed, home prices kept increasing. The national median price jumped nearly 15% in May from a year earlier to $407,600. An all-time high. I'm Mike Hempen.
Charitable giving reaches a record high, but inflation looms.
A report from Giving USA says donations last year were $485 billion, an all-time high, and a 4% increase from the record $466 billion contributed in 2020. But donations were down 0.7% when adjusted for inflation. Giving to arts and culture groups jumped nearly 28%. While giving to education declined nearly 3%. But overall, giving grew or stayed flat in 8 of 9 major philanthropic sectors. I'm Mike Hempen.
I'm Ed Donahue, AP News.
The nation's youngest children began receiving COVID-19 vaccines this week. Meanwhile, in other pandemic news, New York is giving city workers a chance to return to their old jobs.
Kids 5 and under are starting to get coronavirus shots. The AP's Shelley Adler has the story.
Parents of the younger set have plenty of questions and concerns, like which vaccine should my child get? That answer from White House Virus Response Coordinator Dr. Ashish Jha.
They're both exceedingly safe. They're both effective. If you really, so either one is fine. If you, there's some nuanced, subtle differences, you can talk to your family physician or pediatrician about them.
And what if your child will turn 5 soon?
This is a question I get asked most by my friends who have kids in that age range. What I personally think you should go ahead and get your child vaccinated. If they're right on that cusp, you maybe want to talk to your pediatrician or family physician.
Dr. Jha appeared on ABC's Good Morning America. I'm Shelley Adler.
I'm Ed Donahue, AP News.
Now to COVID shots and kids. One emergency room physician calls this an exciting moment. COVID vaccinations are beginning for little children. The AP's Jennifer King.
The nation's infants, toddlers, and preschoolers are finally getting their chance at COVID-19 vaccinations as the U.S. rolls out shots for tots this week. Shipments arrived in some locations over the weekend, and some spots, including a Walgreens in South Carolina and another in New York City, opened up appointments for Monday.
And I'm Rita Foley, AP News.
New York is giving city workers fired for not getting the COVID vaccine a chance to get their old jobs back if they get the shot. Mayor Eric Adams fired more than 1,400 city workers who failed to comply with the vaccine mandate put in place by his predecessor. A city spokesperson says about 600 unvaccinated workers, like police and firefighters, got a letter detailing the offer. Department of Education workers will get the same memo later in the summer. The city says 97% of workers are vaccinated and that the goal was always vaccination rather than termination. Adams was the target of criticism for exempting athletes and performers not based in New York City from the vaccine mandate while keeping the rule in place for private and public workers. Julie Walker, New York.
In international news, an earthquake hit Afghanistan, the need for the U.S. and Europe, and money was raised from the sale of a Nobel Peace Prize.
A powerful earthquake in eastern Afghanistan has killed at least 1,000 people.
Cell phone video provided by Afghanistan State News Agency shows victims hurt in a magnitude 6.1 earthquake early Wednesday, being treated outside of a clinic in a remote village near the border with Pakistan. The narrator describes a rush of injuries and asks for emergency measures to be taken. The earthquake could be felt at least 300 miles away in Pakistan and India. Images circulating online from Paktika province show destroyed stone houses with residents picking through clay bricks and other rubble and people being carried into helicopters to be evacuated. The UN resident coordinator in Afghanistan says the response is on its way. Many international aid agencies left the country last year after the Taliban took over, complicating rescue and aid efforts. I'm Jennifer King.
Ed Donahue, AP News.
Europe can't defend itself without the U.S. That's what one foreign official says. He's pointing to Russia's war in Ukraine. Poland's foreign minister, Zbigniew Rau, says the crisis shows that without the U.S., Europe cannot defend itself. He thanked Washington, but said it shouldn't have to take all the responsibility. He said NATO members in the region should take more responsibility for their own protection. After Russia invaded Ukraine, the U.S. deployed more soldiers to Poland. It's using that country as a hub for weapons going to help the Ukrainians. I'm Rita Foley.
A Nobel Prize sold off Monday night raised a staggering amount for Ukrainian charity. The Nobel Peace Prize auctioned off by Russian journalist Dmitry Muratov to raise money for Ukrainian child refugees sold Monday night for $103.5 million, shattering the old record for a Nobel. No word on who bought it, Muratov said in an interview after the auction. I was hoping that there was going to be an enormous amount of solidarity, but I was not expecting this to be such a huge amount. Muratov has said the proceeds will go directly to UNICEF in its efforts to help children displaced by the war in Ukraine. Just minutes after bidding ended, UNICEF told the auction house it had already received the funds. I'm Jennifer King.
And finally, in environmental news, the Supreme Court has rejected an appeal tied to a weed killer, and a giant fish was caught in the waters of Cambodia.
The Supreme Court has rejected a corporate appeal over the Roundup weed killer. Bayer, which makes Roundup, asked the High Court to shut down thousands of lawsuits claiming the weed killer causes cancer, but the justices have left in place a $25 million judgment in favor of a California man who says he developed cancer from using Roundup. Bayer has won several state court trials involving similar cases, but a federal appeals court last week rejected an EPA finding from 2020 that Roundup's weed-killing ingredient is not likely to cause cancer in humans. It ordered the agency to look again. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Did you see the photo of that 600-pound-plus fish? No, we're not making this up. It was caught in the Mekong River in Cambodia.
It's a giant stingray measuring 13 feet from snout to tail and weighing about 660 pounds. Seb Hogan is the leader of Wonders of the Mekong, a Cambodian-U.S. research project.
When you see a fish this size, especially in fresh water, it's hard to comprehend.
It took more than a dozen people to encircle the fish in the river, holding a tarp under it. The scientists tagged it with a tracking device. Hogan says the catch is a hopeful thing.
The fact that the fish can still get this big is a hopeful sign for the Mekong River.
The stingray was released back into the river, and that tag will send tracking information for the next year, providing unprecedented data on giant stingray behavior. I'm Ben Thomas.
And I'm Rita Foley, AP News.
I'm Terry Lipschitz, thanking you for listening.
Audio provided by the Associated Press. Music is by Skillcell and provided through Pixabay.
Be sure to subscribe to Hot Off the Wire on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode.